Welcome to Marketing Tips for Translators for a successful freelance career and lifestyle with your host, Tess Witte.
Welcome to another episode of Marketing Tips for Translators. I'm so happy you're tuning in today, especially you who have become a loyal listener. I am so glad you find the episodes helpful and motivational for your freelance business. So today I have a special guest with me that gave two great presentations at the recent American Translators Association's conference. One of the common traits for us introverted translators is that we don't like selling. In fact, we might even be afraid of selling. We feel that we're pushy, we're afraid of rejection. We just wish the jobs would come to us so we can focus on translation. Does that sound familiar? I know it does for me. But before I introduce my guest and we dive into the topic, I want to share a listener shout out. This one is from Kembla Translations in Australia. She says, "This is a fantastic podcast that has helped me get the confidence to set up my freelance translation business. Now the business is growing steadily and I'm grateful for Tess and all the guests for the inspiration." So thank you to Kemla. You make me so happy to hear that I've been able to help you start and grow your business. So thank you also for taking time to tell me this and leave a review. So now back to the episode. I would like to welcome Andrew Lawless from Team Lawless. Welcome, Andrew, and how are you today?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Tess. It's an honor to be on the show.
It's an honor to have you. I know that your presentations at the ATA conference were well received, and today I would like to talk to you about one of them that was called Overcome the Fear of Selling and Do It Your Way, which intrigues me a lot. But before we start to dive into the fear of selling, tell us a little bit about yourself and your career in the language industry.
Yeah, sure. I have over 20 years of experience in localization and translation. Wow. I actually started out like 40 years ago, I think. No, that's 35 years ago, where I translated a book called Word for MS-DOS 4.0 for Microsoft Press. It was a totally unprofessional translation at the time. We didn't do terminology management and all of that, right? Okay. So that's how that started. And I've always been attracted to this industry. But first was in publishing, digital publishing. That was before the CD, before internet, right? When Bill Gates said, like, the internet will never be a business model for Microsoft, and the CD-ROM is the future. And so my job was to secure rights for CD-ROMs in the US for European markets. And that was my introduction to, or formal introduction to, the industry.
Okay.
And since then, I served as managing director for Central and Eastern Europe for Berlitz, which at the time was the largest provider of translation services, which is now part of Lionbridge. Mm-hmm. I used to be the head of the translation and interpretation unit of the World Bank in Washington, D.C. Okay. And since 2005, I have supported a number of translation and technical documentation departments in Fortune 500 companies, as well as worked with owners of translation companies.
Okay. And you are bilingual?
I would not say bilingual. I think my English is better than my German at this point. Yeah, I was born and raised in Germany. You detected my accent.
Uh-huh.
And you know where it goes, right? When it comes to business, my English is probably better than my German.
Uh-huh.
Conversationally, my German would be better than my English, yeah.
Okay. So you're bilingual and you've worked in the language industry, but now you have a different business, don't you?
Well, I've been a consultant to language businesses or organizations for so long. Mm-hmm. And my point, when you're a localization consultant, your average assignment is about 4.5 months, right? Mm-hmm. 4 to 5 months. Mine was, I think, 5.7 years or so. And so I've asked my clients at one point, like, why are you keeping me and my team on board? And they came back very with a clear answer. I said, you know, we're not keeping you because of your knowledge. I'm like, what do you mean? You know that? But and I said, oh, no, we love your knowledge. We're in awe of your knowledge, right? And all that. But we keep you engaged because you made me a better manager and my team a better team. Uh-huh. And that was that response I got across the board. And then I said, okay, if that is my unique selling proposition, if you want to, then just make that official. And I also then went with that decision. I made sure that I educate myself or continue to educate myself to be the best coach and business coach or high performance coach that I can possibly be for my clients.
So you have coached companies in sales then?
I have coached sales teams as well as business owners. That's correct.
Okay.
But I've also worked with operations. And so when people work with me, one of the first things I do is I give them what I call a wheel of life, where they draw a picture of where they really are in their business and what are the management areas that they need to focus on. Mm-hmm. And for example, in that management area, in one of the business management areas is constant optimization, right? If you don't constantly optimize your processes and innovate, you know, the how you communicate, how you make it easier with the client, how you plug into the client's workflow and so on, without that, you cannot sell. Right? Mm. You couldn't be the best salesperson if your operations doesn't support or the way you work doesn't support the workflow of your clients, you will have a difficulty moving getting in. And the same is true with financial and legal. If you're financially struggling and there are no safety nets, then you will not be your best when you deliver your services, right?
Okay.
So you can't really separate the sales aspect from, you know, the marketing, the process optimization, the innovation, client service, your marketing approach, and so on.
So, but your presentation at the ATA conference was about overcoming the fear of selling, do it your way, and that is directed to freelancers, right?
That's directed to both freelancers and small translation bureaus, as well as LSP, if you want to, because the psychology behind it is the same, right? Whether you run like a multi-billion-dollar company or you make $50,000 a year, if you want to make money, you need to sell. And in order to sell, there's psychology within yourself and within your prospects and clients that is universal.
Mm. So why do you think that we are afraid of selling?
Oh, well, we all are, right? So for one, I think what happens, we have that car salesman, you know, the sleazy car salesman in mind, and nobody wants that, right? Or the insurance salesman, right, who wants you to sign for a certain policy because they're getting the biggest commission on it, right? We all have that in mind, and we don't want to be that person. I totally understand that. The other aspect of it is that we often do not know how to sell, what to say, right? We are afraid of rejection and brush offs. And let's face it, when you sell, not everybody will buy from you.
Yes.
Right?
People,
when you contact them, they will actually look at you and say, no, what are you doing here? I don't want you. That apprehension, makes us very often say, I don't want to subject myself to that. And the other one is, the third one is the action that we take, right? So that we feel we're unnatural. We feel we need to become a different persona or adopt a different persona. And then we don't come across authentically, and clients feel that. Clients are like horses, right? Mm. So if you know, like horses, they sense like your emotions, like immediately, and they know immediately how to play to them, right? Mm-hmm. And clients are the same. If there's the slightest notion of fear, of doubt, or not being authentic, clients feel it, and that's also one of the reasons why they don't buy, or why you are not that successful in selling your services. So it's the attention, the know-how and the focus, the apprehension, which is the rejection and brush off, and it's the action that we're taking that seems to be unnatural and then becomes fruitless.
So, but we still, we are our own businesses. We are entrepreneurs. What can we do about it then? I mean, we are dependent on having clients and customers, so we do need to sell. How can we overcome our fear of selling?
Yes, and as you said the right thing, right? We do have to sell, right? Mm-hmm. So one of the statistics that I heard at the ATA, which I found mind-blowing, is that the average sales outreach of a freelance translator was like 3.5 years ago, or whether it's marketing emails or whatever. So with that attitude, you're not going to sell, right? So you're,
yes.
And I always say it's like slow growth is a result of an empty pipeline, uh-huh. right? And the pipeline is empty because at one point you stop prospecting, right?
Yeah.
So if you want to grow your business, prospecting is not an option. It's a must.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that most translators that I meet, they make that a must because of, the fear of rejection and brush-offs. They don't know what to say, and they're not themselves when they sell.
Mm-hmm. So what can we do about that?
Okay, so which we like for one is when it comes to know-how, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the sales process, right? So they're up there. It's not rocket science, right? It's relatively straightforward and easy. But you need to find a process that works for you.
Okay.
Many of the sales trainings out there, are not, they're either too much for, quote unquote, just translator, because they are geared towards larger, like software companies, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Trainings like spin selling and Sandler method and customer centric selling and solution selling, and they all fall into that category. Just way too much for a translator, right? For an
mm-hmm.
individual, or maybe just a translation bureau. So find a sales process, that makes that happen. The second is when it comes to, you have a question.
No, that was it. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. So the second is, understand to use the power of no, right? So, we are afraid of rejection and brush offs because, it feels uncomfortable and we don't know how to respond to that. Well, two things, right? So one is we already know what the top rejections are, right? So you're too expensive, you're not fast enough, your technology isn't competitive with ours, whatever it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we know that we can have a list of answers, productive answers in advance and research that most people don't go through that effort. And then each time they're going to ask the question, they know what to say. The other part is that, what we need to understand is that no is the beginning of every good negotiation.
Okay.
But every good negotiation starts with no. Why? Because no gives us that, satisfies that innate need for safety. But the moment I say no to you, I'm in a safe zone, right? So now what we need to do is use that no as again, at the beginning of the conversation. No is much stronger than yes or maybe.
But
how often have you said...
But if we use that no as a beginning of the negotiation, won't we become the sleazy car salesman then?
Why? Why would you say that?
I don't know. Tell me how you would use it as a beginning of the conversation. To me, it feels like, okay, they're not interested. I'm not going to push them. I'm not going to be the sleazy salesman.
Well, you're only sleazy if you use sales tactics, right, to sell to a client or somebody an inferior product, right? So what we don't like about the car salesperson is that they sell us a car for as much money as they can get, and then it's a rotten tomato, right? Or a lemon car, right? So that's what makes us feel betrayed. But have you ever had a good salesman who showed you all the cars and you bought a car that much more expensive than you wanted to buy, but you were very happy with the purchase, and you thanked the salesperson a year later that he or she actually made you make that choice?
Yeah.
It happens all the time. We don't mind salespeople. I love salespeople. I love salespeople when they are dishonest. And so, but what we need to understand is that no doesn't mean no, right? No means that the other person wants to satisfy his or her innate need for safety. And once you said no, you're in a safe zone. How often have you said yes or maybe to somebody just so that they shut up?
I usually don't, actually.
a lot of people do. No, though, always alters the conversation.
Mm-hmm. And
so, for example, one of the examples I gave you at the ATA is, if I wanted to sell you water, well, we can do that right now, right? I can say, Tess, do you like fresh water?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Would you like to be able to have fresh and safe water everywhere at any time that you want it?
Of course.
Right. So would it be helpful if you had a faucet in the kitchen and you knew you have the freshest, cleanest water coming out of there?
Sure. Yes.
Yeah. So I have a water filter here for $500. Do you want it?
Okay. No, it's too expensive.
See, there you go, right? Because all the time, this is like the learning that was, or the things that were taught to us a few years ago, that you need to get a person to yes. And the theory was that if a person says yes, 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 yes a few times, then it's easier to get to the yes when you make an offer. The opposite is true, right? Because all the time I give it a safe speech, you're in the head of your mind is to say yes, right? Mm-hmm. But you're like, okay, where's he getting at? You know, where's the pitch?
Mm-hmm.
Where's the
mm-hmm.
So yes actually puts you into a state of where you feel unsafe. Whereas if you have the opportunity to say no, you feel better. I'll give an example. I could say, hey, Tess, are you absolutely sure, like given the Flint, Michigan water crisis and the reports of all the cleanliness of water in the United States, that your water that's coming out of your kitchen faucet is clean?
No.
So would you say drinking dirty water is healthy?
No.
Yeah. So would you want your kids to drink contaminated water?
No, but how do I apply that to a translation buyer?
So, well, it's the same thing, right? So you need to learn how to use the power of no and ask calibrated questions. So calibrated means that you lead the conversation in a way that is helpful for you and the client.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's very straightforward. But once you know that no is the beginning of any negotiation, a good negotiation, you're not afraid of it. You actually see there's a good sign. most people do not know what to say when they get no. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the third one is how we take action, but just be yourself. So if you're a translator, mm-hmm. you're probably more detail oriented than most of your clients, right? Mm-hmm. You've got to understand that you can easily overwhelm your client with too much data and that you miss opportunities. So for mm-hmm. translators that sell, they are not, in general, not all of them, but in general, more in danger of missing opportunities by taking too much time to act than losing a sale because they made an offer too early.
Okay.
Right? So because your clients, most of the clients, they don't need that much data. Mm-hmm. So that as translators, we tend to work with a lot of data and information, and we are nitpickers, right? Which I want a translator to be. So my perfect translator is somebody who's very accurate and detail oriented, right? Ask me questions. It says, Andrew, on page 2, you use the word client, and on page 17, you use the word customer. Mm-hmm. The same thing for you, or is there a different mechanism behind it, right? Which in my case there is, right? Because the customer is somebody who does business directly with me, and the client is my customer's customer, right? So a totally different mechanism behind it. As a translator, I would want you to come back and ask those questions and verify if there's indeed two different mechanisms, or if I'm just using them intermittently, in which case I can, you also make my source document better because I eliminate all of those potential sources of confusion for the reader, right? But that also means that if you have that natural talent, that you're not naturally good at summarizing.
Yeah.
Right? And bringing it to the point.
So you say we should sell differently depending on what type our clients are. What do you mean with that? What are the types, and how can we find out which one our customer is or potential customer?
Yeah. So in our environment, we typically deal with three types of clients, either with fact finders. Those are people that initiate action by research and look at a lot of data and then have the ability to derive a strategy from that.
Okay.
So these are people that when you talk to them, they need an advance. They need, you know, some of the case studies. They need some data. They need citations, all of that in order to make a decision. Mm-hmm. And when you want to sell to them, it's very helpful to send them written material in advance that they can study. So when you meet, you have a conversation. The second group of people are people, what we call follow throughs, right? So they are really, really organized. For them, the process is more important than the details. So you will have a conversation more around, you know, how do you work? What are your next steps, right? What are your steps after translation? What is the document? So what are you giving to your translators? What do they do with it? What do they give back? What do you do with the translation afterwards? Mm-hmm. How can I plug into your system and all of that, right? Mm-hmm. Different conversation. Do they want to know the details at one point? Yes, but that's not what initially gets their attention. Mm-hmm. And it's a quick start. They just they love written words, they're spoken words. They brainstorm, which is very confusing for translators a lot because they brainstorm aloud, and they say, well, what is in the head right now, much of which they've never had thought before themselves. And, you know, as translators who are fact-oriented and fact-finders, we are often confused by that. And we're thinking, well, the client changes his or her mind all the time, right? So in the course of one conversation, where in fact they're just brainstorms, right? And these people tend to get actually irritated by too much data because it interrupts their brain for their thinking process. Mm-hmm. And so to these people, you just need to go and say, look, hey, I have something totally new that nobody's done used before. You could be one of the first, and it will make you super productive and shine. Do you want to know more? And then the answer is typically yes.
So, but we freelance translators, we usually work with clients all over the world. Some work locally mostly, but some work all over the world, and it's not very easy to do phone conversations. How can we detect what type of client it is without talking on the phone?
Well, for one, that's where my coaching, my program comes in. There's only one surefire way, of course, which is taken and called the A index, which you cannot always do with clients. But in my experience, for example, is that when I go to clients and I say, or even prospects, like, in order for me to be able to give you information better in a way that you can act and communicate with you better, I'm going to make an initial upfront investment in like a Colby index that helps us understand you better. And most clients actually take that with pleasure. If that's not an option, you need to listen to what they have to say, right? So when they talk about if they're focused on the past, right? So fact finders, they're always focused on the past. What I've done in the past, how I can build on my experience. And they talk about data, they talk about analogies, they want verification, they want case studies.
So you say that we should talk to them, even if it's not that feasible. We should always have a phone conversation.
Well, you see that in emails up there, right? So if they talk about outlines and process and maps and procedures and diagrams, and they want the chart or they want the workflow description for you, or they want like a workflow description, how you show quality and all of that, you're probably more dealing with somebody who's a follow through, right?
Okay.
Somebody who uses metaphors and, wants visuals, ad libs a lot, focus on the future only. Those are the people that say, so what are we doing next? What's your vision? How will you support us moving forward? How do you envision yourself working with us on building the terminology or whatever? You probably have to start and adjust that. But by and large, I think what I want translators to understand, it's not that difficult. So don't overthink it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Picking up the phone and talking to people is much more important than any crafted message, right?
Yeah.
People that charge you for writing a script and writing an email and creating an SEO and using keywords and all of that. At the end of the day, when you sit down for an hour every day and you call people doing the up, right, and with a simple framework of what you have to say, you generate more clients than with any other methodology that you can use, especially when you're starting out and you don't have a website yet and you don't have the time and money and resources to manage your SEO and running a website. And by the way, running a website is your biggest productivity killer ever.
Yes.
And that's for your clients.
Yes. Yes, you shouldn't use creating a website as an excuse to go out and contact people.
Exactly. So, for example, I have this prospect framework, and it's easy, right? So you pick up the phone, you call the prospect, and either you get the voicemail or you get a person. If you get a voicemail, then if it's somebody you know, you leave a message and you wait for a call back, which most of the time doesn't happen. So you just call again, right? So if the person that you call, you get the voicemail, you don't know the person, you don't leave a voicemail, you just call back the next day, right? But should you get a person on the call, all you need to do is introduce yourself. Then you need to address any rejection brush-offs and objections that you may hear about the call. If the person hangs up, you just call again, because in a week from now, they will have forgotten that you called them anyway. But if you were able to get through the rejection brush-offs and objections, then it's really about then your four objectives, right? You either sell during the call, which is rare that you would sell it in the first call, but that can happen depending on where the client is, or you set an appointment where you have a conversation in more detail, or you gather more information about the client, or, and that's always a secondary goal, you build familiarity with you and your brand.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, and you do that a few times, and if you do that every day, once in the morning, picking up the phone and calling, and an hour in the afternoon with emailing, I guarantee you that your pipeline will be full in 2 months.
So how can we get them so create familiarity by calling and emailing them?
You build familiarity by calling, by email, by emailing, by being consistent with your message, by mm-hmm. what you put out on Facebook, on LinkedIn, and that all has to be. Can give an example. The example that I gave at the ATA that everybody chuckled about was, I always, when I speak, I have a dark blue T-shirt, right? And the same glasses on all the time, right? Because I don't want anybody to be confused about who I am, right? So I have the same picture and headshot on LinkedIn, on Facebook, in my email signature, in all the bios that you see of the events that I speak. So that there's familiarity with your brand. You don't want to look totally different all the time. So it begins with those things, right? The fonts that you use, right? How you, the colors that you use in your, in all of your material, that all has to be, congruent and, reflect your brand. And then it's the conversation. Yeah.
Well, anyway, I think I interrupted you. You were not done with the four types of customers and how to find out which one we're dealing with.
We have four. I think I'm only focusing on three because of that. That's like 90% of the people that you need in our business, if not only five. And those are the ones that are fact oriented, those ones that are process oriented, and those ones that are innovation oriented and move forward to a quick start.
Okay.
Right? So that's one thing you need to know. So you tailor your communication accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess my main message is do not. So if you think that all through and that scares you, you're not going to do things, right? You will only sell when you pick up the phone and pick up a phone call people. And I said all the time, I go to even larger organizations and they ask them, but what about social selling and what about email and what about this and SEO? It's all important. I'm not saying it's not important. If you want to grow your business fast, then you've got to pick up the phone.
Okay.
And I do that.
So let's pretend that I am a translation buyer and you are trying to sell your German translation services to me.
Yes.
On the phone.
Yes.
Let's do some role play here. Let's see how you would do that.
What's the context? Have we talked before? Did I call you, or what happened?
We've never talked before.
So I called you and you picked up the phone.
Yes.
Okay. So I would say, hi Tess, my name is Andrew Lawless. I'm in this case, I'm like German to English, English to German translator.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably not a good time for you to talk. So I just wanted to see if you had about 15 minutes later this week to talk about what you do with German translations.
Oh, but I don't think I need any German translations right now.
Okay, so that's a very good question. in that case, if you don't let's put it that way. In that case, would you need it because you don't have it, or because you already have a vendor?
I already have a vendor.
Okay, cool. And you should, right? So. Yeah, and I want to talk to you about selling. I'm just interested in how you're doing it, and maybe give you one or two pointers to keep your current vendor honest.
Well, my current vendor is part. They come from a translation organization, so I need to have my software translated into 10 languages, of which German is just one of them. So I just use one person that can provide me contact, or they are my contact, and they take care of the rest and all the other languages too, including German.
So awesome. May I know what the vendor is? Or who the vendor is?
Yes, they're called iTunes Translations.
iTunes Translations. Yeah, you know what? I happen to know them very well. They're an excellent vendor, so congratulations. It absolutely means that you've done your research, and you must be very happy with them. What do you value about them? Because I like them, but I want to know, what do you value about them?
Oh, it's just the ease that I can just have one contact person there, and they take care of all the 10 languages. Yeah.
Okay. So anything else that you value?
I value, well, that's most of it, and they do the negotiations for me, and I just need to talk to one person, and I don't need to buy or be responsible for 10 different contacts.
Yeah, cool. So in your time with the vendor, right, so they, how long have you worked with them?
Sorry?
How long have you worked with them?
I work with them for 2 years.
Okay, so in those 2 years, what have you learned about working with a vendor?
I have learned that, what do you mean what I have learned?
Yeah, in terms of like onboarding a vendor, quality assurance, or yeah, whatever in this relationship, what were your major learnings?
My major insights were that it is hard to create the relationship with a vendor and find good translators. And once I have done that, then I am reluctant to switch vendors.
Yeah. So so now that what you knowing that, what's not perfect yet?
Well, sometimes the quality is unreliable. Sometimes the German translation is really good, and sometimes it is not exactly up to par.
Yeah. So is it then fair to say that you're not, are you then certain at all times that you can rely on the quality?
I guess I'm not certain, but it saves me time that I just have one person to one contact point.
Yeah. So do you have like absolute confidence right now that the quality assurance processes on the vendor side are sound?
No. So, I mean, sometimes it seems like it's not the same. They don't use the same translator all the time.
Yeah. Okay. Good. So we can move this role play forward. It will take longer than you.
Yes, I know. We probably don't have the time. But how would you close the sale?
Yeah. So what I've done right now is I got a flat out rejection. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing I did, I put you in a safe zone by saying, you know what, totally cool. Mm-hmm. You have a vendor. Who do you work with? Yeah, I like it's a good vendor. That means that you know what you're doing. So I make the situation safe for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
I also know at this time already that I will probably not be able to close anything during this call.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So my strategy now moves towards gathering more information and creating familiarity with myself.
Okay.
So what I've done is the way I asked the question, that there's a process tool that I've learned from when I asked you what do you like about the vendor. Mm-hmm. Now I get a list of everything that you value. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
When I ask you what you have learned, now I make you think, you know, about the and already prepare you for thinking about what's not going so well. Mm-hmm. And then the third question is like, what's not perfect yet, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now you give me all the list of things that you value from a vendor that you're currently not getting.
Mm-hmm.
So yes. During that first call, I will probably not be able to sell to your own competitors. Once you have a vendor, it's difficult to get in, but I can keep the communication going until you get to the point that you in a selling window, in a buying window. Most clients, when you meet them, are not in a buying window, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
And one of the mistakes that you can make is like when they're not in the buying window to push for the sale. That's where we felt pushed over the edge. You were feeling to be pushed too much by the salesperson. Instead, I said, look, let me qualify you. Like, let me gain more information and create familiarity.
Mm-hmm.
Me and my brand and what I'm doing. And a little bit further down the road, we will have that conversation again when you're in the buying window.
Yeah. So I agree, we cannot cover it all during our talk today, but I wanted to come back to one thing before we end this call. Your presentation was about do it your way.
Yeah.
How can a freelance translator adapt the sales process to do it their own way?
Yes. So if you are, let's say, a fact finder, right? So meaning you're very detail oriented and you work with a lot of, you can work with a lot of data and derive a strategy from that.
Mm-hmm.
Your blind spot is that you need more information to make it a decision than your client does, most likely. You do not have a natural feeling for when the client is ready to buy. In other words, the client is probably much earlier ready to buy than you think they are, right?
Okay.
That is a blind spot. So you need to acknowledge the only way to figure that out is to do a Colby A index. But once you know that and you have certainty that that's your mode of operation, now you can build strategies to eliminate the blind spots. For example, you have certain ways where you can ask the client, what do they need to move forward, right? So ask of a question when they're ready. You can also, in order to give you more, so what fact finders, what happens with them, they go on a sales call and it makes them feel very uneasy because they always feel they do not have enough information about the client or even their own product and processes, right? Mm-hmm. So doing a lot of information gathering up front and educating yourself before you get on the call so that you are able to answer some of those questions would, for example, be very, very helpful. Whereas a quick start, which I am one, right? And I'm an explainer, meaning I work with a lot of data, but I'm not that detail oriented as somebody who would be a strategizer. I love going into uncertain conversations and brainstorm and come up with answers as questions arise. And for me, it would actually be a mistake to prepare myself too much because that's usually when I fail, right? I'm better when I'm slightly underprepared and have a challenge in front of me. Right?
Okay. And I really put you on the spot today because this was not really a planned role play. As you could tell by my answers too, I wasn't really prepared either, but it was fun. So, any last tips on once we have found the person and we've had the sales conversations, what do we do to close the sale?
Okay, closing also depends on who you are and who the client is, right? So, for example, if you if you were an initiating quick start, meaning you have a high tolerance for risk and uncertainty, but you're not so detail oriented, for example, you would need to learn in terms of closing that you need to time your closing to the customer's pace, because that's my blind spot, right? I'm ready to close before the customer is ready, and then the customer feels like they feel pushed, you know? So I need to learn how to listen and watch and to see, like, you know, if the buyer needs more information before they decide, and also to not become impatient with clients that need more information and more time, right? Whereas fact finders, which what most translators are, because that's what their job requires from them to be good, they want to make sure that they're making the right offer, right? But some prospects, or most prospects, want to move faster than that suits them, right? So as a fact-finding translator, if you were that person, you need to check on the buyer's readiness to buy from the get-go. And if you want to close, ask things like, what they want and how soon, for example, so that you get the pointers for them. Yeah. You could also ask them what they need from the translator in order to make a decision to hire. So the closing is that's where the closing depends on you, your own personality. However, that you were asked for the advice, here's my advice, right? Schedule your sales. I mean, you've got to, and I promise that to everybody who's listening here, I promise that unequivocally and without evasion of mind, that if you schedule prospecting an hour in the morning on the phone and an hour in the afternoon via email, and you do that every day and you focus on it, and during that time you switch up all the procrastination and you organize your work in a way that you can make a lot of calls, send out a lot of emails, your pipeline will be full in 2 months from now. I guarantee you that. The reason why most pipelines are empty for translators that I know where they have an empty pipeline is because they haven't scheduled the sales. They do everything else but selling. The second, measure your progress.
Okay. Right?
So that I want to make $10,000 a month, right? And you may start out with $1,500 a month, right? But this constantly checking in, what we know from high performers, they set an intention and they always reflect. Right? Action plus reflection of equals success. So measure your progress, and just that measuring will over time will get you on track.
Okay.
The third one is, The third one is to take a Colby A assessment. And Colby also has a sales MO document report that you can buy. It's just not that expensive. I tell you that the Colby A is $55, and the sales MO, I think, is $30 or so. And you get from that, you get a multi-page detailed document that gives you concrete guidance on how you could best sell with your personal strength profile. And by the way, I am a certified Colby consultant. I don't make money with it. As far as I'm concerned, you can buy 1,000 of them tomorrow. It's not going to pay my rent. Yeah. It's just such a strong instrument that everybody that I've known of used it has achieved their and implemented it, has achieved their results within 2 to 3 months.
So if the listeners now would like to find more about the Colby process, or your sales process, or you, where should they go?
Yeah, so they can go to my website. It's teamlawless.com. Teamlawless.com. And so when you go there, there's two things you can do. You would see the first button is access to my mini class. It's a 5-part mini class on finding your personal, special personal power, which helps you for selling, helps in selling a lot, because you will gain insight on what you're uniquely good at and what's your value proposition to your clients. You can, if you wanted to take your Kolbe, you can go to kolbe.com and buy it there, or you can send me an email. So if, go to my website, contact me, or send me an email at andrew@teamlawless.com. And you can buy it from me. It costs the same thing, because the same cost comes from the same system. But then I have you in my system, and then I can run a few additional reports that otherwise you would have to pay for, and I could run them for free. Not the sales MO, but there are others like coaching reports and so on that I can share. So go to teamlawless.com. Take the mini class, and then take a Kolbe.
Okay, sounds good. And I will put these links in the show notes so that the listeners can go check them out too.
Super.
So thank you for your tips and sales knowledge. I hope the listeners also found this very interesting and useful, because without sales, most businesses, including freelance translation businesses, would not make any money and would very quickly cease to be businesses at all. So now I wanted to, any tips that can help us make the sales process easier is, of course, very, very welcome. Now to the listeners, to find out more about Andrew and to check out all the links that we just mentioned, you can go to marketingtipsfortranslators.com/226. And there you will also be able to leave any comments or questions to Andrew or me in the comments section about this episodes and about sales. And you can, of course, click on your favorite podcast listening app to subscribe or leave a review. And stay tuned. In a few weeks, I will also have Andrew back talking about mindset and how to change our mindset. So thank you for listening. And thank you again to Andrew.
Thank you very much. That was a great pleasure.
Thank you. Did you know that most translators struggle with how to market their freelance business? Even if I have a background in marketing, I struggled with this in the beginning too. During the past decade, I have practiced and learned most of what you need to know to market your translation services and build a thriving translation business. Now I've taken my best marketing tips and compiled it into a short 18-lesson audio course. It has bite-sized marketing tips so you can start to grow your freelance translation business and reach your ideal clients today. Even if you're an experienced translator, you might struggle with particular topics such as price negotiation or how to market to direct clients. Effective marketing of yourself and your business can help you reach the next level of success. The tips in this audio course has produced positive results for translators at every stage in their career. And now I want to help you too. The best part is that this audio course is yours absolutely free. To register right now and start listening today, simply visit marketingtipsfortranslators.com/marketshare.